When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get him out of my sight.
Khaleesi, please. I just need a moment of your time. I brought you a gift.
It's true.
He has.
Who are you?
I am the gift. It's a pleasure to meet you, Your Grace. My name is Tyrion Lannister.
Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jenny.
And I'm Karen.
And I'm Grace.
And this is Game of Microphones, episode 11, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So David was supposed to be on this week, but he's super sick.
Yeah. He has poor guy.
A bad sore throat. He can't really talk. So I asked my wife, Jenny, to sub in.
Woo. Yes. That'd be an all girls thing.
Yeah. And it is going to be all girl because I'm not going to be staying for the whole thing. So you get a break from the guys this week.
And David should be feeling better soon because I sent Qyburn in there to help him out.
Oh, no.
He's good with patience.
Well, next week it's going to be an all boys episode.
I know. That's going to suck.
No, that'll be great. What are you talking about?
We'll see.
Boys, boys, boys. Imagine that in neon, right?
All boys.
All boy review.
Oh, yep.
Okay, so what am I doing here? Well, I just wanted to come on and say a few words because of last week's sort of sensitive subject and the way that we handled it. We got a lot of feedback on last week's podcast after the scene with Sansa and Ramsay, particularly about my and Mr. Blog's response. Actually, most of the response we got was positive, believe it or not, but there were a few people who were super upset, and I wasn't surprised at that. Two people actually stopped listening a few minutes in. They're like, I couldn't go on after those first few minutes.
Oh,
there
no.
was one person who told me twice that she cringed while listening. That was Grace, by the way.
Yeah.
And I totally don't blame you guys. In fact, my response was kind of nagging at me through the whole episode, and that's why I paused towards the end and I said, you know, I welcome your feedback and I want to stay open-minded. So I'm thankful that a few of you did write in, you know, so I'm you were super upset, but I'm glad you wrote in instead of just being upset and not engaging. But I am also sure that that means there's many more people who were upset and didn't write in. So I hope you're still listening. I don't always respond to criticism, but I think it's important this time. So I wanted to just make clear how I feel about all this. I do stand behind some of the things that I said, but some of my thoughts have changed. And they were actually changing during the episode, mostly thanks to what Karen was saying. So, number one, where I was just flat out wrong, and I totally changed my mind afterwards, is I said I didn't think Sansa was surprised by Ramsay's behavior that night, particularly the violent behavior. But I guess I was looking at it through, like, just Game of Thrones is always so fucked up, and every, you know, bad stuff happens to everybody, and also Ramsay's an evil character, so how could she be surprised? But I mean, that's just ridiculous because somehow I forgot that Sansa didn't know Ramsay. She knew he could be kind of a jerk just based on like dinner conversation, but she didn't know he was an evil sadist.
Yeah.
And she also knows that there's plenty of good gentlemen in the world of Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. you know, like Tyrion, her father.
Her brothers.
Yeah, her brothers. Yeah, she's got a lot sure. of experience with guys who have shown, you know, what a model man should be. And she didn't know what Ramsay was like. And I think she knew because she decided she was going to marry him that she would probably have sex with him. But she didn't know that he was going to have Theon stay and watch. And she didn't know that it was going to be violent like that. So she did not sign up for that at all. Karen, you knew that right away. Didn't strike me right away, but I'm sorry it didn't. Where I do stick with what I was saying that some people seemed kind of upset about was, I do believe that she chose a course of action that she knew meant she would probably be having sex with someone that she didn't know or love. I think a lot of women in this time period, Game of Thrones most closely resembles the Middle Ages, and the, from what I've read, the elite had arranged marriages. Most of the time, that was the norm. And I read that both husbands and wives were expected to be sexually available to each other. So, and it was a choice for her to do that. I went back and watched, and Littlefinger told Sansa, you know, I'm not going to force you to do this. If you just say the word, we'll turn the horses around. I mean, who knows if he really meant that, but that's what he said. And I think that Sansa set her mind on getting revenge and trying to retake Winterfell and decided to go along with this marriage, even though she didn't want to, so she could accomplish her aims. But I really want to make clear, just because she made that choice, it doesn't make Ramsay right for taking advantage of her. He's absolutely not. It doesn't mean Sansa is not a victim. She totally is a victim. And it doesn't mean she's to blame for being raped. I'm partly like, God, I hope some of you would know me better than that by now. But anyway, I must have come off like I thought that, but I don't. She's absolutely not. And it doesn't even mean that the sex wasn't rape, because it obviously was. So that's where I stand on that. Lastly, number three, a listener wrote in. I'm going to read part of it. She said, I do not know how large your audience is nor what your demographics are, but I imagine young males make up a large portion of your listeners. Did you know that 1 in 4 women are raped in college campuses? Did you know that the excuses range from, quote, she knew what to expect, to, quote, well, we were making out and then we had sex? In this latest podcast, you gave young men who did not know any better an even greater gray area to operate under when it comes to consent. That is irresponsible and infuriating. Hearing two men trying to minimize the gravity of the scene was disgusting. You came short of saying it wasn't rape. It really killed me to get that. I would never, ever want to contribute to any Ramsay-like behavior or, you know, make guys think that they can engage in any kind of behavior like that. I was just thinking about it. Like, let's say Roose Bolton's son was Sam instead of Ramsay, and the marriage was arranged. You know, given the standards of the time, I wouldn't blame Sam at all if he thought there was a good chance they'd have sex on their wedding night. But Sam would not assume that, and he would check in with Sansa about it. And he absolutely would not want to do it if she didn't, unless she wanted to too. And I think that's the way it is. Sex is only worthwhile if both people want it. Some guys get off on forcing women into it. And I think a lot of other guys just think the only way to get sex is to pressure women or take advantage. And I think that's horrible. It's wrong. And I think those kind of attitudes come from insecurity and feelings of not being good enough just as you are without having to do that. So I what I want guys who are listening to know, this sounds preachy, but I just want to make it clear that if you feel like that, just take some time away from women, work on building up your life and your self-esteem. And if you come to women from a place of self-love and respect for her as a person, then everything good will spring from that. So that's a lot, but I think it's enough.
That's nicely said. I like what you said about that. That's great. Thank you for clearing that up too. I think that,
and I didn't cringe once.
Right on. Okay. So Jenny looks like she might be cringing a little bit, but that's okay. So I'm going to leave you guys to it. Have fun. I can't wait to listen.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
See you. Bye. Okay, let's do this week's top five highlights of Game of Thrones Season 5, Episode 7, The Gift. So what did everybody think? What's overall consensus here?
I thought it was good, really touching, satisfying. It had some really tense moments and some good twists. Covered a lot of ground. You know, it wasn't perfect, but I really did enjoy it.
Okay. And Jenny?
I love the episode. I mean, every single scene meant something, moved the plot along. It was packed full of things going on. And, you know, everything was very tightly written and efficient. And I really appreciate that kind of show.
Yeah, I completely agree with you both. I liked it better than last week's episode. I thought it was, like you said, really dense, complicated, and felt maybe more than any other this season, sort of like a chess game on steroids. So I gave it 4.4 out of 5 unlit candles in a high window.
Aw.
So how about you first, Jenny? You want to give us your number 5?
All right, my number 5 is Reek's submission. He is a very submissive boy in this episode. He's definitely been totally, completely destroyed. But, you know, it's a little weird because to me, someone who is that, you know, destroyed, there's usually some sort of like Stockholm complex going on right there, right? Like they've kind of thrown in their lot with their captor or like people who stay in abusive relationships. It's because they still love the person or there's something keeping them with that person. This is way too complete. The guy is way too psychotic and he's still giving in. I mean, you would think he'd be completely despairing and like find a way to kill himself or something. So it's a little weird, but it's, you know, definitely moving the plot along. At least we'll see whether it's sustainable for those reasons.
Did you suspect that he was going to get all motivated by what Sansa told him? You are a Greyjoy and you are heir to the House Greyjoy and the Iron Islands. Did you think that he was going to go up to light the candle in the window? Were you surprised when, in fact, he went to Ramsay Bolton's room?
Well, see, that's what's great about this show is that you never really know. You know, I would have been, it could have gone either way. You know, the show has done a very good job of not letting you expect anything to happen.
Right.
Maybe this is the one that maybe he'll finally get his cojones back, right? Or maybe he's still going to, you know, he's going to turn on Sansa. And so I had no idea. But I'm not surprised either way because, you know, I had no idea which way it could have been either way.
Yeah. I mean, he's such a broken person. And you have to remember he was just rewarded for telling Ramsay the truth.
Right.
You know, with Miranda and Sansa and Theon. And he wasn't punished. Ramsay rewarded him and praised him for his loyalty and telling him the truth. So, you know, here he is doing it again. Maybe he's looking for rewards. I just think he's such a broken person. The little bit that's still Theon in there wants to help Sansa and feels bad for Sansa. But I think he does think of himself as Reek, like he was saying this episode.
Were you surprised, Gracie, when he opens the door and there's Ramsay?
I wasn't surprised, but, you know, part of me wanted it, you know. Oh, it was such a great scene with him just walking through Winterfell, and it was gorgeous, and you want to think he's doing the right thing, but that's too easy. That's not the show. I mean, at the same time, it's like I'm of two minds because it's not the show I'm watching. It's not the show I really want to watch. There's plenty of those shows out there. So, no, I wasn't surprised, though part of me was disappointed in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I completely get that. Super interesting. Okay, what's your number 5?
My number 5 was Master Aemon, and I just thought the scenes with him in this episode were so touching and reminded us of what a kind and gentle guy he was. And it was so sad to see such a great character go, but I think they really did him justice. I love seeing him with little Sam, you know, seeing such an old person with a newborn baby is always touching. And
yeah,
of course, you know, when you see someone at the end of life and the beginning of life. And I kind of liked his last words. He's like, "Egg, I dreamed that I was old." And to me, it kind of seemed to speak of how quickly life just flashes by. You know, it almost does seem like a dream, maybe. And I don't know. He was such a great guy. And it got to me. I felt very emotional. And, you know, that he had a great send-off.
He did.
We don't get that too many times in Game of Thrones, so I appreciated it.
Yeah, I love that he called her Gillyflower.
And
tried to get her to bring little Sam south of the wall. Head south, you know, save yourself. He knows it's not going to be good.
He knows it's a dangerous, becoming a dangerous place, yes.
He's a wise guy. They should listen to him.
Yes, I hope that they do.
And now his watch has ended. So sad. I agree with you. That was Samwell giving the eulogy for him was super touching.
It was a beautiful eulogy, yes. And I liked that he, you know, he was the blood of dragons, but now his fire has gone out. That was beautiful.
Yep. Completely agree with you both. Okay. My number five is, I have to say, she's my favorite actress on the show. It's Diana Rigg as Lady Olenna Tyrell. She's so great trying to save her two grandkids. And she figures out how to do it like a boss, you know, after trying to reason slash threaten Cersei and the High Sparrow. And she failed on both those things. She completely miscalculates the High Sparrow, thinks that, you know, he's in it for his, like everybody else, he's in it for himself. But in fact, he's a true believer. So finally, she goes to Littlefinger's trashed brothel and gets the information that she needs. And at first, I didn't know what he was talking about when Littlefinger said to Lady Olenna, "I've got a handsome young man for you." And I thought, wait, what? Is that, who is he talking about? And it was Cousin Lancel. So, ha 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 ha. And I'm sure we'll talk about that later on. But, oh, it felt good.
Yeah, though it was Littlefinger that called her there for the meeting, so I'm assuming it was his idea and his plan. But I'm really glad as well that Lady Olenna is back. And it was funny to see her stumped for, you know, she couldn't figure out what the High Sparrow's motives were. And
yeah,
really, you know, she thought it had to be something more complex than it really was, that, you know, like you said, he's a believer, but that was kind of interesting to see her stumped for once.
And she realized pretty quickly, she is a very smart, very quick woman. And she's just like, all right, it's a dead end here. Moving on.
Yeah, when she threatens to, you know, draw the purse strings tight, and not give any, you know, grain to the peasants. That doesn't work either. It doesn't work with Cersei, and it didn't work with the High Sparrow. Yeah, amazing. All right, back to you, Jenny. What's your number four?
Quick question. So isn't Lancel that buff guy with the, you know, that's been kind of representing the Sparrows?
Yes. That is Cersei's cousin.
Lannister.
So you don't think he's already told the High Sparrow that long ago when he was unburdening himself upon his conversion? I guess I'm you know, I was a little confused, you know, listening to Littlefinger saying, "I have a, you know, young man," and I was like, "Well, they already have the young man." So
yeah, that was a little unclear. Like you said, it seems that he would have confessed that a long time ago.
But maybe he didn't. Maybe he had some tiny little piece of Lannister left in him, and he was protecting her, and finally unburdened himself to the High Sparrow.
Oh, or knowing Littlefinger, he already knows it's going to go that way, and he's going to take credit for it in Olenna Tyrell's eyes.
Yes.
Maybe. Yeah. Or, you know, or maybe you can ask forgiveness. Who knows what their exact beliefs are. Maybe you can ask forgiveness from the Seven or whoever they follow, and privately, you know, and maybe he didn't confess it to somebody else.
Well, actually, I've got something in the news segments that kind of speaks to that. So we'll get to that.
Okay, so my number four is Bleeding the Kid. So Stan is being shocked at the suggestion that he should sacrifice his child for a little push from the gods, which is very, very Greek tragedy, very Agamemnon and Iphigenia there. You know, and I started thinking about it because, you know, he said, like, oh, let's leech her or let's use the leeches instead. And she's like, oh, we can't use the leeches. And I was like, oh, why can't you use the leeches? And I started doing the math. I was like, okay, we got a 10-year-old girl. What's her body mass? What's her blood volume?
You doctor.
You can do 30% before you die. And yeah, you know, 30% for a little girl is about like 15% for a big guy, right? The Gendry. So obviously they need about a liter of blood. Which okay. Must have been a lot of leeches on
right?
Gendry. Yeah.
Well, I don't understand why the leeches were, I mean, why leeches were enough for Gendry and not, I mean, she killed, you know, two kings are dead because of a couple leeches. Why does Shireen have to die? Maybe they need stronger magic.
Oh, it could maybe. Be. Oh, that's true. But, you know, I mean, like part of me was like, oh, come on. Can't you hack the spell? I mean, think of that guy who works for Cersei. Like, he's obviously doing magic.
Qyburn.
You know, thinking out the box, you know? You know, like, can't they just, like, bleed the girl a little bit at a time, throw some leeches in there, keep it anticoagulated, kind of build up a supply, get a leader. There you go. Throw the spell.
But Jenny has it all worked out.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth a try. Come on. Well, of course, maybe, this is a place of magic, not of science.
Though. Maybe Melisandre doesn't want her around anyway. I mean, maybe Melisandre thinks it might be better and Stannis would stay more focused if the kid was out of the picture.
Maybe. I don't know.
We don't know what she thinks.
No, we don't know what she thinks. She's a nut job.
She and the High Sparrow would have a great time. We should send them to the opera together or something.
Right. I would like to be a fly on that wall. Okay.
My number four is Cersei's self-satisfied smirk being wiped off her face. Yep. This is a moment that I have been waiting for this entire season, and I was so excited that we got it tonight. The actress, remind me of her name?
Lena Headey.
Yes, Lena Headey. She played it so well, and it was great to see, and I'm sure this is something that excited everybody, every viewer, but I've been waiting for it for so long, and yep. I loved it. It's they did a great job with it.
Especially after she went and sort of mocked Marjorie. And
sure.
It was such a little, I'm just going to say it, she was a bitch to her. And yeah. Gave her the
last night's leftovers.
Yeah, here's last night's leftovers. And I love that Marjorie was having none of it and threw it at her and told her to get bent. Ugh, it was good.
Very good.
You know, I keep imagining what might happen in the future. You know, they go to trial, and you know they're all on trial, and then you know the High Sparrow, you know the Tyrells get off. They're like, oh, he's, you know, he's thinking like buggery. Oh, I don't know, 2 years hard labor and perjury. You know, you're gonna have to donate 500,000 gold coins to the poor.
Uh-huh.
Ah, but Cersei, and then yes. She realizes that you know she's kind of been drawn into a trap almost.
Yeah. Oh, hey, you killed your husband, the king, Robert Baratheon.
And you slept with your
cousin.
Your cousin.
Yeah. And you've put a bastard on the throne. And
right.
Whoa, you know, in comparison to perjury and buggery, this is pretty serious stuff.
Right, exactly. Oh, it was delicious. And at the very end when she said, mine is the last face you'll see. I mean, the expression on the guards' faces when they shut the door and shut the little window to the door. She's not getting any sympathy there. It was awesome.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, that was actually my number four as well. Cersei got what was coming to her.
Yay.
Jenny?
Number three is that little prison flirtation between Bronn and what's her name? One of the snakes? I believe it's Tyene.
Tyene.
Yeah, so, I mean, I almost considered it this light interlude in the episode because there's so much, like, tension going on and so much plotting and all this stuff. And suddenly, you know, there's this flirtation. Yes, it involves poison, of course. You know, this is Game of Thrones and near death and boobs. But, you know, this is as light as it's going to get in Game of Thrones. And it was fun.
That I enjoyed getting Bronn singing. We heard the end of the song. That was good. I'm pretty disappointed. It seems like this is the first episode I've been on that we've really covered Dorne, so I haven't been able to complain about it. But I've really been disappointed in the whole Dorne arc. So to me, I was like, oh, this is so corny. And I didn't really understand what Tyene's motivations were with that whole play, and it didn't make sense to me why they were in the prison and Jamie's up in the nice guest room. But anyway, it was very lighthearted, and we do need a break from the tension, and we definitely got it with that.
Okay, Gracie, what's your number three?
Oh, okay. My number three was Sam and Gilly.
Yeah.
Aww. I mean, I just think their relationship has been really fun to watch over the last couple seasons. And when those two brothers of the Night's Watch were harassing and assaulting Gilly and beating Sam, it was just so clear that both Sam and Gilly were more concerned about each other than they were for themselves. And I thought the love scene was tender and sweet. And I liked when Gilly asked him if she was hurting him. And when Sam said no, she's like, "Are you sure?" And, you know, I like that question because I think it had kind of a double meaning, and the other one being like, "Are you sure you want me to continue?" And, you know, we'd be breaking your vows, et cetera. So sweet. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah.
So we'll find out in the morning whether he regrets it or not.
But my vows.
Do you think he will, Jenny?
I don't think so.
Hey,
I mean, if I'm going to put money on it, I'm definitely going to put money on him not regretting it. And I don't think I'm going to get much money back. I don't think a lot of people are going to put money on the other.
No, I don't think so. No, he loves her so much. So.
And he was a total hero. I mean, standing up to those horrible people that were about to, God forbid, rape Gilly. Giving enough time, you know, stalled long enough for Ghost to sweep in and be a direwolf. And that was great, too. He was great in that this whole episode.
He was great. And, yeah, like you said, he wasn't going to give up. And I think had Ghost not shown up, he would have fought to the death for Gilly.
Absolutely.
He might not have succeeded in saving her, and he might have died in the process. But I think just that's the person Sam is.
By the way, is having a direwolf the best pet in the world in this universe?
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. Everyone needs a direwolf in Westeros. I mean, if you don't
have... Only the good guys.
Yes, exactly. So, actually, the Sam and Gilly story arc was my number three as well. So,
oh, no.
That's okay. That's all right. How about you, Jenny? Back to you.
Back to me. Number two, Cersei's parenting style. she gives, you know, Tom in the speech, you know, how much she loves him and how much she wants him. You know, all she's looking out for is for him and for him to live. And my first response, you know, my reaction was just like, if you want to save your kid, you keep your kid as far away as possible from the Iron Throne. You know, I mean, like, you
for
should
sure.
be taking some money out of Casterly Rock's treasury and go... find a nice farm in the south, and you know, or you know what? Send your kid to the wall to be maester. I mean, Aemon's the only one who died of old age. I mean, if you want to keep your kid alive, you're going about it all wrong.
Agreed. And the sad thing is, I think she really believes that. I think she believes that she's doing it. She has herself convinced that she's doing it for her children when, you know, it couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah, she's such an evil person. Ugh. It's going to be fun. I'm definitely enjoying this arc. All right,
yes,
Gracie.
The trial should be fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, my number two is Ramsay's sick head games. Because as much as Ramsay completely disgusts me, I must say that I find it a bit fascinating to watch him play these head games on people. You know, he's so much more calculated and like a much bigger monster than Joffrey ever was. And the actor just has his roll down pat, you know, he has that creepy, creepy smile, and it, which just turns my stomach. And, you know, I mean, I can't wait as much as I like watching just, you know, when he's just sitting there, standing there talking and smirking, as much as that does fascinate me, I really hope he has a more awful and painful death than Joffrey did. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, you know, it's funny. We talked about this, I think it was last week, we talked about this too, who's worse, Joffrey mm-hmm. versus Ramsay. And both, they're kind of neck and neck. They're both pretty awful, and they've demonstrated their awfulness in, you know, a multitude of ways. But I think Joffrey had a lot of awfulness in him too.
Oh, he certainly did. He was a monster as well. I think Ramsay has one up on him just because he's had a few more years to practice.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, his house sigil is the flayed man, for God's sakes. So says it all right there.
Yes.
Yeah, I do think the show is doing a very good job of making these people so likably unlikable. Like, you just love to hate them. that you know that if anything happens to them, you know, in the end, hopefully something will, but we never know, that it's just going to feel good. And is, you know, that's what's great about the show. It makes you feel good, even when someone's getting, you know, poisoned.
Yeah, it's nice to have a couple true villains out there that are just bad through and through, so you can hate them, love to hate them.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, my number two is Sansa in this episode. She had it was a hard episode for poor Sansa. We saw that she's been beaten by Ramsay, and things are not looking good for her. She's being locked in a room, and every night he comes to her, rapes her, beats her. It's terrible. So I love the scene where she tries to get Theon to help her and, you know, light the candle. Of course, that all backfires. But it was a great scene where she gives him this pep talk and see if maybe that can, if it can compel that last little bit of Greyjoy in him to help her. And I like that she also stands up to Ramsay in the episode too. She tells him, you know, you're a bastard, right to his face. I mean, you know, I know that word has a couple different meanings, but she's like, you know, you probably don't have as much claim to the throne as, say, the unborn child of your stepmom has. Just saying, if that's a boy, then, I mean, it was so great. And then, he tries to crush her by showing her the flayed friend from the north. But I think she's still strong, still fighting as best she can. You see her swipe that pointy-looking thingy, so maybe she can stab Ramsay herself, which is kind of great.
Yes. I mean, she does, and she really shows that inner strength. And, you know, like she said, when she's playing her own head games with Ramsay. That was great to see.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, I love that the poor flayed woman from the north who was her friend never gave up Brienne.
I didn't even think about that.
Do you know if she knows about Brienne?
Well, I don't think...
I think so, yes.
I don't think she did because there was nothing that Ramsay said about that. And Brienne was still there. So Brienne was on... They showed her on the balcony balcony.
Wait. Well, no, actually, come to think of it, because Brienne told some random person at the inn. So that person innkeeper. Had to have told someone in the castle to tell Sansa.
Right.
Brienne didn't
exactly.
tell Sansa directly. So it must have been the old lady.
Yes.
Right.
That's what I'm assuming.
Right,
and
right.
She didn't give it up.
No, she's loyal.
So I did think the efficiency of this episode. Ramsay was talking about how Jon Snow was now Lord Commander of Castle Black, and you could see Sansa thinking, like, you know, she really has no idea what to do. You know, her thought was to take over Winterfell, but right now she's not in the strongest of positions. But, you know, I wonder whether she's now thinking, like, okay, if I do escape, at least I can go to Castle Black. That's not necessarily going to be a good strategy, given that Jon is probably going to be gone, and it's a pretty split group of people there. I think, you know, they were split voting for Jon and voting for the other guy, and Aemon was the tiebreaker. So, and now he's gone.
Yeah. Yes, things are not looking good for Jon at the Wall. That's for sure.
Yes, and he's gone. Who knows what's going to happen at Castle Black? It could all go to hell without their leaders there.
Exactly. Okay, Jenny, what's your number one?
Oh, yes. The fighting pit. Jorah showing how it's done, man.
Ooh.
This is how you fight. You don't have to, like, just hack away. You use some finesse and just put them out. I mean, it was, you know, after a whole episode of a lot of people kind of being thwarted or plotting, it's just tension and a lot of tension and a lot of things not being held in or being trapped and all that stuff. You know, there's this big glorious flight to release all of our stress. You know, it's like wham, you know, because you've wanted to, like, you know, punch Ramsay and stuff like that.
Yes.
And you can,
yes.
You know, with this fight, you know, you can get out your desire for, you know, action. Anyways.
With your bare hands, by the way.
That's right.
Yeah. And I really like how he read the situation. He knew that the violence was turning her off and she was about to leave. You know, he runs out there and he put on the kind of fight that he knew she wanted to see.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And I was so glad he got to do that, because this being the show, I wasn't sure whether he would look through the window as she walked away, you know, not being able to get out. Right.
The show is famous for making people like just barely miss each other continually over and over. So it was good to see. And they're finally, the three of them are finally together. We've been waiting in most of the season for it. So
yes.
Very good. Very satisfying.
And exactly. I thought it was pretty funny to see Daenerys sitting next to her fiance watching the fight and, you know, kind of representing couples doing something that only one of them really enjoy.
What could you mean?
I mean, he was like excited. He's like, we're going to have the fights again. Yeah, yeah. And she's just like, I have to get out of here.
Too funny.
Yeah, I hate it when David drags me to the fighting pits too. It sucks. The look on my face.
I mean, people bleed out. Especially when the fighting is obviously subpar and they're just hacking away and, you know.
Yeah.
They don't even put on a show. What's up with that?
Okay, Gracie, what's your number one?
Okay, my number one we really touched on, but it was Sansa and Theon. And I liked it just because the scene really affected me. And just to see her desperation as she appealed to Theon for help and to see once again how truly broken he was. It was just, it was so hard to watch, but it was so well done.
Yes.
And like I said, I liked it also because as Sansa has so little power, but she really does have a lot of strength. And I think, you know, we saw it then, and we saw it, like you said, with Ramsay when she was playing the mind games with him and grabbing some drill or whatever it was, some Sharpie object.
Uh-huh.
You know, she's not broken.
Nope.
And I think she's more determined than ever to retake Winterfell.
And, you know, so. Brienne has got to understand that maybe she's somewhere where she can't get up to the highest tower and put a candle in the window. She just, maybe Brienne at this point is just going to make sure that she's doing all right. And maybe Brienne can somehow change how this all goes down. I'm hoping.
I hope so too. And, you know, how one part of me kind of wanted Theon to help her. The other part, if she can't save herself, it would be good that it's Brienne. I don't want the knight to come riding in. Thankfully, it looks like Stannis is kind of snowed in and he won't be the one. You know, I want Sansa to save herself. And, you know, if I can't have that, if Brienne could help her, that would be great too. So I don't want her to be the damsel in distress and
again,
the men come riding in and help her. Yeah.
Yeah. She's been the pawn of men for long enough.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Agreed. I agree. Although I think she does need Brienne's help. Because, and I think Brienne's just at the point where she's going to go and check and make sure that everything is all right. You know, I'm sure she's wondering.
Maybe. Or it could be Sansa stabs Ramsay and Brienne helps her to get out of Winterfell. Because
yes.
That's going to be a challenge as well. It's guarded and
writers. I would like that to be how it goes down. Thank you.
But make it do it in such a way that we really didn't expect it.
Right, we'll act surprised. All right, my number one. You already touched on, which is Tyrion and Daenerys finally meet, and the look on Daenerys's face when Jorah says, "I have a gift for you," and Tyrion struts out and says, "Yes, you know, yeah, I'm the gift." And she says, "And who are you?" And he says, "I am Tyrion, House Lannister." And the look on her face was great. But so even though we touched on that, I'm going to say my runner-up number one, which is that winter has indeed arrived. And this episode,
whew,
there was a lot of snow. I felt cold watching the episode.
I love seeing the snow.
Yeah, it's fun. I was in Portland, Oregon this last weekend, and this spoiled Californian really felt cold all weekend long. And I came back to Northern California, and it was like, oh, thank God. Oh, winter hasn't come here. I mean, the drought's bad, no doubt. But I was finally warm again. And watching it, the snow on last night's episode, I was like, wow. It's starting to play into the strategy with Ser Davos talking to Stannis about not attacking until the weather gets a little bit better. And, you know, Stannis is like, you know what? It's snow is the new normal. So we better get used to it. And this is the only way it's going to work. I'm going to attack.
I suddenly felt how hard it must have been to take Moscow.
Right.
And now I know why, you know, never succeeded.
Yes, exactly. All right. Any notes?
I think we went through most of my notes. Oh, you know what we really didn't talk about, and it's just a small note that I had, is just the interaction between Jamie and Maricela. And she really told him how it was. And so, I mean, his plan is an even bigger fail that nobody is on his side. So, and he fumbled his way there. And now it's not his effort wasn't even appreciated, and rightfully so, by Maricela. I like that she's like, you know, you don't even know me.
Yes.
You know, so
such a teenager.
Teenager in love.
Well, I mean, isn't he taking her back mostly for Cersei?
Yes.
I mean, does he think she's actually in it? I mean, he doesn't know about the plot by the crazy, well, not the crazy, but you know.
No,
the,
but they
the
did
girlfriend.
Send. They did send that snake, that red viper statue.
Oh, yeah.
So that's that true. Was kind of a threat. So Cersei felt that she was in danger, and so I assume he felt she was in danger as well.
Yeah. Well, she's gonna be in danger wherever she goes.
The Cobra Gram.
Well, but she didn't really seem to be in danger until recently. She's been there for years, and they seem to be watching over her quite well until this latest plan. But yeah. Do you have any notes, Karen?
I do. I have one last thing. I thought it was funny. Well, not funny, but it's such a Game of Thrones thing when Dario is in bed with Daenerys and he tells her all rulers are either butchers or meat. And I thought, wow, Game of Thrones. There it is. In a nutshell.
And she's like, very true.
And she's like, no, you don't understand. At the end of this, I'm going to start a representative democracy and we'll set out a constitution. You just have absolutely no imagination, Dario.
He really doesn't. He doesn't get that he's dealing with a whole new thing here with her. She'll show him.
Well, it reminded me of The Walking Dead with the whole train car scene with you're either the, what was it, the cow or the butcher type thing. The hunter or the, I can't remember exactly thing. Oh gosh, I'm a terrible The Walking Dead fan.
I've erased last season's Walking Dead from my brain until next season comes along. And then I'll rewatch and I'll be like, oh yeah, that's right. It was a good season. Okay, that's it for our top five highlights of Game of Thrones season 5, episode 7. Let's move on to listeners' responses.
Martha Michaela Hutchman Brown. If they hurt Gilly more, parentheses, I would have been done with the show. Happily, it ended with enthusiastic consenting relations between folks who like each other. Those are pretty rare, it seems like. Speaking of which, I don't think we've ever seen Dany smile so happily and broadly than in the arms of Dario. Adorable.
That was a cute scene.
Yeah, he does seem to make her smile until he says that she has to be a butcher or meat. Heidi Loftus says the hubby was happy to see boobies again. Those were pretty good boobs, too.
They were excellent. Boobs.
Loved Gilly and Sam scenes. I guess winter finally is coming.
Kyle Rupert says, Sophie Turner is killing it this season. I hope her character gets the best revenge on Ramsay. P.S. Dany finally meets Tyrion. Can't wait to see how that relationship will play out.
Well, you know, you were mentioning her expression when she saw Tyrion. And I couldn't interpret that expression. It was kind of like, was it a excited expression? Was it like a just astounded? Or was it kind of like, okay, ex-boyfriend has just brought me this dwarf. Okay.
No, I think she knows that it's Tyrion Lannister and what the repercussions really are going to be. She looked pretty gobsmacked, which was great.
What do you think they are? What do you think?
Yeah, what are the repercussions?
What do you think she thinks of the situation? I couldn't really read it either.
I don't know, but I think she thinks it's a game changer. And it is. Having a Lannister there with her, and especially after talking with him, I'm really looking forward to seeing the next episode. Yeah.
I suppose she knows that he is being hunted by Cersei, so that he would most likely be on her side.
And also, you know, she's been focusing on domestic policies this whole time, and finally international relations has been dropped in her lap. And now she's like, all right,
well,
maybe I can focus all this domestic unpleasant towards a war on the West. Well, or something like that. I mean, that was her long-term goal.
Yes.
That's awesome.
So John Bucket says, Ramsay is the new Joffrey. So twisted and evil, you want him taken out in a suitably gruesome way. But you kind of love to hate him and will miss him when he's gone. Sam is the man getting up from such a beating to confront his tormentors. What a lad.
Love Samwell. Alicia Gotsey's Stout says, my thoughts. I want to slap that stupid smirk off Ramsay Bolton's face. Sansa grabbed a weapon. Yay! Ghost! Gilly and Sam, oh my. Are you the butcher or the meat? Lady Olenna and the High Sparrow make a cute couple. Can't get enough of Bronn singing, but not too sure I like the Sand Snakes. Although I'm glad to see Bronn get the antidote. The gift from Baelish to Lady Olenna, is it Lancel's betrayal leading to Cersei's arrest? If so, well played. Jorah prepping for the fighting pit reminded me of the movie Gladiator. No cock merchant for Tyrion. Woohoo! He finally meets Dany. Love the look on her face. Oh, thanks, Cersei, for last night's leftover venison dinner to Marjorie. You hateful bitch. Oh, and karma.
Besides, well, you know, we all know Marjorie is likely a vegetarian. That's why she's so beloved by the people.
That would only make her more beloved in my eyes.
Ned Rogers says, I thought this episode was fantastic. Even the cheesy jail scene with Bronn and the snakes gets my thumbs up. Tyrene is hot. Loved everything with Gilly and Sam, but was very sad to see Maester Aemon's passing, even though it was coming. Very excited to see what happens next with all of the subplots in this episode, except for the Dorne storyline. Something has gone wrong with that one, agreed Ned. But the convergence in Meereen with all the action at King's Landing, Winterfell, and the Wall have me anticipating a great finish.
How many episodes do we have left?
Three or four? Three.
Okay.
Three.
But this is episode 7, right? So
yeah,
three.
So we have 8, 9, 10. Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Good finish.
Yeah.
Here's open.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Christina Sowers says, this episode gets 4.74 fighting pitmen. The stories were perfectly placed this episode, and I was excited to finally see Cersei get a bit of her own karma handed back to her. Littlefinger is amazing to watch, and I can't wait to see where he goes next with his plans.
Laura Wilswink writes, it was so satisfying to see Cersei have that shitting grin wiped right off her face when she was dragged away by the Sparrows, especially after the way she treated Margaery. Karma is a bigger bitch than even you, Cersei Lannister.
Awesome.
Well, it's not just karma. I mean, she was sloppy. She went in there without any guards. I mean, she obviously trusts the High Sparrow, and you should not trust anyone.
You're absolutely right. She was sloppy. And she should have known that Lancel would give her up and that Lancel had some really important information about things like, oh, I don't know, killing King Robert Baratheon and sleeping with her. So I'm surprised she didn't have Lancel taken out.
You know, she's gotten sloppy, like you said. She's been drinking a lot. She's gotten too emotional about these decisions she's making. And yeah, she's not a smart player.
But she's so fun to watch.
Yes, she is. Into your brain, they set you on the treadmill, and they made you change your name. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle.
Okay, next up we have some news about Game of Thrones. And I have to say, this week was a very quiet week in Lake Throne Be Gone. There's only two real stories that I found that would be good for this week's episode, but they're two pretty good ones. First one comes from Time.com. This is an old Time magazine, by the way. And the title is The Sparrows Are Based on a Real Religion. George R. R. Martin, the author of the books that inspired Game of Thrones, says the medieval Catholic Church, with its own fantasy twist, was his inspiration for the militant cult, also known as the Sparrows, that is now taking center stage in the show. He writes, or he said, if you look at the history of the church in the Middle Ages, you had periods where you had very worldly and corrupt popes and bishops, people who were not spiritual but were politicians, Martin told Entertainment Weekly. They were playing their own version of the Game of Thrones, and they were in bed with the kings and the lords. And I thought that was really amazing. Now that he mentions that, I mean, of course, you can absolutely see the parallels.
Sure, sure. That was a good one.
Yeah, and I was trying to think, like, what is he basing this on? I was actually wondering that myself, the faith militant cult, and hilarious that medieval Catholic Church with his own little fantasy twist on it. Great. Okay, the next one is Game of Thrones cast teams up with Coldplay's Chris Martin for Game of Thrones the Musical. I'm not kidding you.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I watched a couple of these and they're pretty amusing. The cast of Game of Thrones has teamed up with Coldplay frontman Chris Martin to create a Game of Thrones comedy musical skit for Red Nose Day. So I don't know if any of you know what Red Nose Day is. It's a fundraiser for poverty-stricken children in Africa and the UK. It's, I believe, a Great Britain-based charity. And so they did a series of these musical skits to support their fundraising efforts. The musical parodies have been compiled documentary style, featuring the actors from the critically acclaimed fantasy epic series, including Emilia Clarke, Peter Dinklage, Nikolai Coster-Waldau, and Kit Harington, all of whom display their singing talents in the name of charity. Several videos from the 12-minute musical have been released online so far, featuring Game of Thrones' main stars performing songs about some of the famous and infamous scenes from the series. Emilia Clarke, who plays Daenerys Targaryen, did a reggae parody in tribute of her own character. It's kind of funny. Peter Dinklage, who is Tyrion Lannister role, has been the most enduring in the series so far, gloated over his continuing presence in the series, having survived being killed off on the Grizzly Show, complete with backup singers. That's a funny one, too.
I saw that one. It was hilarious.
And Nikolai Coster-Waldau channeled his Jaime Lannister character in a softball soft ballad dedicated to Cersei Lannister while accompanying himself on the piano. And finally, Kit Harington has also been featured as Jon Snow singing the rock song Wildling for Ygritte. Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. So you can find those on YouTube, I believe, and they're fundraisers. So enjoy.
Very nice.
And that's it for news about Game of Thrones. Let's go to Raven's Calls.
Okay, our first letter is from James. This episode has my undivided attention all the way through. I give it 4.75 exaggerated deeds on a slave resume.
That's great.
Here are some scattered notes I took throughout the episode. I noticed the slightest hint of a nod and smile between Jon Snow and Ollie, which makes me think Ollie might be more loyal to Jon than we have speculated. I really think Alfie Allen should be considered for the Emmy for Best Supporting Actor. His work has been amazing. Agreed.
Yep.
Sansa has some balls to be insulting Ramsay the way she did, even after she has been under his abuse for several days. Where the heck did Ghost come from? The last place we saw him was near Craster's Keep, right? Did we even see him come back over the south side of the wall? I'm thinking we saw him out in the yard one time, like chewing on a bone, but that could be me remembering it wrong. I'm not sure.
I think you're right.
They're making a point of saying how cold it is in the north. If that's the case, why are the main characters never wearing hats or hoods? There are shots of the men huddling and shivering with Ser Davos standing right next to them with a huge cloak, No hat, no hood, no hair on his head. Keep him warm. Is this just so that we can see their faces in the shots?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm thinking yes.
Else we'd have to be like, no, okay, John is the one in the red ski cap.
And right. The color code him.
Uni. Melisandre bragged about how her magic killed the usurper kings Rob and Joffrey. What about Balon Greyjoy? Davos even pointed this out at some point last year that Melisandre had promised three kings and only two have died. Where the hell did this storyline go?
Good point.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, did she give a timeline? She just said three kings, you know, within the next 100 years.
Yeah, Balon's just going to die of natural causes, and she's going to claim that death. I was glad to hear the end of The Dornishman's Wife. I felt the TV audience was cheated last week when Jaime cut Bronn singing off. I like that Jorah got Daenerys' attention not by fighting well and killing people, but by fighting well and not killing a single person.
Yeah.
You know, I've always wondered about this when I see this on a lot of action movies, which is like, all right, you're not dead. But you could have all your short-term memory erased, or...
It's a Hollywood knockout, Jenny. That's it. It is.
They're not going to die of sepsis in 3 days after suffering, you know, without morphine for 72 hours.
Dr. Jenny, it's all suspension of disbelief. It's a Hollywood knockout.
We all say we want a quick death. How could they take that away from these people? Now they will have to suffer the long, slow death. But you know what? You know, actually, you know, I think maybe living with short-term memory loss might be better than being dead.
Yes.
I'm thinking so.
I forget.
Okay, let's see. To finish off the last little bit of the letter, as everyone ran out into the fighting pit to watch the fight, I yelled at the TV, "Why is Tyrion the only one that's chained up?" Sincerely, James in Portland. Thanks, James.
You know, James.
I think just because he wasn't fighting, they didn't have to have his arms free to fight.
And he's small. You know, they're afraid he's going to sneak out. You know, you're going to be able to see the other guys when they try to sneak out. But him? Mm.
Or maybe they didn't expect him to fight.
Yes, I'm thinking not.
I have a question for the book reader amongst us. This is for you, Gracie. The Dornishman's Wife, was that in the books?
I have no idea. I don't remember. Probably. Okay. With all the singing that goes on, but I don't remember.
They're only 5 million pages long. I can't believe you don't remember. God.
Ask your husband.
Yeah. I'm not asking for much. Poor guy.
All right. A letter from Drea Age. Good day, fellow Throners. What a fantastic episode. Super looking forward to hearing your thoughts this week. This is a haiku review for you. Snake plays with her prey. Ghost scares off some nasty crows. Queen Mother's sins catch up.
Good one.
That's a good one. Snake's love and ego boost. I'm not going to lie. I feared we might lose Bronn this week. And boy, am I glad they disappointed. I really love watching this guy, and I'm glad we have some more time enjoying his shenanigans.
I have to say that I thought we were going to lose him too. And I was like, oh, what a horrible, awful way to go out. That, you know, but, you know, saved at the last minute.
It's nice that she wears the antidote, you know?
Well, I mean, going out while staring at someone's breasts. I'm just curious from the listeners out there. Is that a bad way to go or not?
Oh, yeah.
He didn't look happy.
Yeah, that's true. He didn't look happy. Brienne. 'Twas only a glimpse, but I love how badass she is. I can't wait until she unleashes it on that despicable Ramsay. Is she just hanging out waiting on Sansa to light the candle and call for help? So many questions, and there are only 3 episodes left. Cersei gets a taste of her own medicine, and it does not go down smooth. Can't say that I feel bad for the old Queen Mother. She has reaped what she has sown, but will she be miraculously saved, mayhaps by Jaime? Only time will tell, I suppose.
Mayhaps.
What a fun romp this show has been. Keeps me glued to my seat and anxious as hell for next Sunday. There is so much going on and so much that is going to happen. Yay. Gather up your direwolves, my friends, for winter is coming.
Finally.
Thanks, Drea. That was a good letter. All right, this next one comes from Mim, who writes, did anyone else rewatch the scene where Sansa told said Tommen Baratheon? I didn't understand it as my brain auto-corrected it to Tommen Lannister. Oh, that's funny. And aren't episodes getting darker and darker through the season? Oh my God. I even saw the Red Lady wear black. Oh, wow. I didn't notice that she was in black.
And I totally agree, because I've been watching the TV show and I was thinking, like, is there something wrong with my TV? Because I can't really tell what's going on. And I'm, like, standing up and trying to, like, see whether it's my TV angle or something. And it's just dark. It's just everything's so dark. I can sometimes barely see what's going on.
Me too. I mentioned this last week.
Literally and figuratively? Or
it is darker in every way. Yeah. I thought this week I was going to see things a little bit better. And then I also rewatched it in high def. And it was still really, really dark. I thought that was my problem last week. But no, it's actually dark. Okay, so Mim goes on to say, I'm always happy to spend time with you guys once a week, and thanks for all your hard work. Ah, it's a pleasure. I give this episode 4.6 skinned northern friends, deflowered Sams. Aww. damn fine Dornish women, and locked up queens out of 5.
Very good.
Thanks, Mim.
Okay, this last one is from Jason Weaver. So I used to think Game of Thrones showed positive images of women. Now I'm starting to wonder. Sansa is now again a victim. Cersei's plan with the zealots has now gone afoul, and she has generally an unlikable character anyway. Lysa was a love-struck mad fool. The Sand Snakes are fools and caricatures. Brienne is a strong character, but she's relegated to looking longingly from a distance. And Dany has continued to bungle everything, including this week, when she is seemingly oblivious that there are slaves in her fighting pits. Did she not know that people were chained up in there? Compared to the male characters, Tywin, who seemingly could do nothing wrong, smarmy turned virtuous Jaime, Baelish's intelligent scheming, or our hero Tyrion, cool and funny Bronn, Jon Snow, the list goes on. Quite a stark, pun intended, contrast between how men and women are being portrayed. Just something to consider. Keep up the work, guys and girls. Thanks, Jason. You know, I don't know about you guys, but to me, what matters to me with portraying women characters is not that they're positive and good or perfect. You know, I like the Game of Thrones, most of the Game of Thrones women, because they're complex, they're layered, they're nuanced, they're free to be as flawed as the other male characters on the show, and they have it. Aside from the Sand Snakes, they're a big fail in my eyes, but everybody else, I really think they have given me what I've wanted in large part with the women characters, and especially considering how very powerless the women are in this time period.
Exactly. I think that's one of the strengths of the episodes and the strength of the series, is that they're not allowed to be strong like the men, but they're strong in their own way. And I was looking at my list earlier and I was thinking, dang, my list was full of strong female characters. Lady Olenna, she's a badass. Cersei, in her own way, complete badass. And I mean, I could go on and on about all the different characters. Even Gilly is amazing. Sansa, Daenerys. There's a lot of really amazing women on the show. And Arya. They're as strong as the time allows them to be. So they're sort of strong in different ways. They have to be clever. They have to be tough in ways that it's not apparent right away. Marjorie is another one that leaps to mind. But yeah, I think there's some amazing women in this series. Now, I don't always like how the series treats them. I don't like how they're constantly put in peril, but I do enjoy how the writers have them respond to it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Totally.
Well, I mean, and I also wonder, like, you know, I don't think there's positive or negative. You know, every character is fairly complex and has positive and negative features. And like the strong male characters, I mean, I don't see them as positive characters. I mean, Tywin, you know, fucking over your youngest son. Yes. Sending him to his death. You know, Baelish, okay, he has intelligent scheming and he's about 99 other horrible attributes. So, you know, I don't consider them positive characters at all. They've got some strengths and they've got some negative points, and you know, everybody's working their skill set.
That's right.
Exactly.
Well put. All right, let's move on to Book Talk with Gracie and Mr. Blog.
Okay, welcome to Book Talk, and I really appreciate you coming in to help me out this week since we have David out sick, Mr. Blog. Appreciate you coming in on your Memorial Day holiday.
My pleasure. Always, always happy to help out and great to chat with you at any time regarding books and how they compare to this show. And we certainly had a number of things that we recognized from the book.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of things we didn't.
Definitely, yes. And I was excited to see some of the things that I've been waiting for all season. So it's nice to be able to talk about it right now.
Well, and something that I've been waiting to see for years because we didn't, you know, again, not in the books, but we'll get to that shortly. And why don't you go ahead and take it with the one email that we got?
Okay. We just have one quick email this week. It's from Sean Bustler. He says, at least he wasn't stuffed into a rum barrel. And of course, he's talking about Maester Aemon, who does not die in Castle Black in the books, but instead he dies aboard a ship bound for Old Town. And what Sam does is put him in a barrel of liquor to preserve his body so he can have a proper burial at a later time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was definitely easier to... or more proper. It was nice.
Well, I do have to say it was also, I know this has had nothing to do with the book, but it was a very beautifully shot scene. I love the way with the flecks of snow falling on his robes.
That overhead shot. Yeah.
It was beautiful. I honestly thought, I'm like, what is that, like a magic robe? It's glistening. I thought it was like shiny with rhinestones or something, but no, it was just the snow. So yeah, a lot more dignity for Maester Aemon to go out that way than it happened on the ship. And of course, on the ship as well, when Sam and Gilly are headed down to Old Town so he can become a Maester, they similar to the show, but in a different way, they too in the book have, coupling in a lovely, lovely, cute way. So that was nice.
Yay,
they got that in
Sam
as well.
And Gilly. Yes, they did. And it seems like with Aemon's words to Gillyflower, you know, he was saying to take the baby south, that seems like that maybe they will be taking a trip too, do you think?
I really hope so. I mean, it does, but again, I guess I haven't said this before. I don't know how much, if any, of Old Town we're going to get and whether or not that's going to really play in. Without the presence of the Greyjoys in the storyline, it does change a lot of things.
But maybe it's important for the end game for Sam
to be there. And they do need a Maester at this point. So that would fit as well. I don't know. We're going to see how that plays out on the show. So I think that kind of covers any of the Aemon, Sam, Gilly things. I mean, I don't think, you know, these same situations were set up, but shall we say the essence is still remain the same, more or less. From there, let's head on over across the Narrow Sea and chat about Dany and Daario and what was going on there. Well, Daario and Dany in the show are still, you know, they're still loving. There's still a cute little romance going on there as well. However, in the books, Daario is pissed that she's married to his Dar Zolorak. Wasn't that right?
Yeah. Yeah. They kind of were on bad terms. Definitely not sweet talking each other in bed.
No, and you get a little bit of a hint of that in this one where, you know, can you be jealous? Are you actually jealous? And he says yes, you know, so maybe that is planting some of the seeds of that. We'll see what happens, but certainly a different relationship there. And then the fighting pits.
Fighting pits are open just like in the books, yes. But a little bit different. Jorah is definitely not, he wasn't in the fighting pits.
No.
And I believe Dany doesn't even go to see the fighting pits until after her wedding. Another thing.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, Jorah, and then with the slave trader, that is a completely different situation as well. I mean, And you wrote this one down here. Why don't you go ahead and describe the deal with Jorah as far as...
Yeah, when Tyrion and Jorah are auctioned, you know, Jorah doesn't fetch this great price. During captivity, he was refusing nearly every order from the slavers. I think he was really depressed and disobedient, and he was being beaten.
Wasn't he like
constantly.
Not talking at one point?
Yes, I believe so. And they end up branding his face with the little, it's a demon mask, I think, but it was the mark for a disobedient slave. So, but one fun fact I found out that he was eventually bought for less than 1/30th of the price that the slaver paid for Tyrion.
Because I got to say, my memories of this whole section of the book are really, really hazy.
Yes.
My main memories I have tend to just surround the idea of Jorah being branded, being considered a bear in a show. Because, of course, Penny is with them as well.
Yes.
It's Tyrion, Jorah, and Penny. And Penny, if for those of you who may not recall, is the little person that was originally at Joffrey's wedding, riding either the pig or the dog, you know, one of the, in the mockery that was. And then Tyrion meets up with them again, and Penny and Tyrion kind of form a bond and traveling together. And I just remember Jorah being in a cage as a bear with the tattoo. And that's like, mm-hmm. as the pale, what is it? The pale mare is, so, you know, we're even missing all of the disease, and maybe they're going to be getting to that in a little bit. Maybe they wanted to push forward the meeting
of
Jorah, Tyrion, and Dany a bit forward, because we don't yet have the siege on Meereen. I'm assuming we're going to get to that.
Yeah, I would think so.
You'd have to. So it's just playing out very differently. So the order of this is just like all wackadoo, and having Dany and Tyrion meeting, well, that changes a whole lot of things.
Yes, very exciting. So
it was. And as you pointed out, you mentioned Tyrion as you know, he was the gift, right? To Dany.
Sure. Dany. Mm-hmm.
Now the title being The Gift. Now, me, when I first heard that this episode was going to be titled The Gift, I thought this was going to be a major thing with the wildlings.
Me too.
And that we'd be discussing all the land that they would be getting just south of the wall, and there might be some insurrection amongst the blacks, you know, the
crows.
Men in Black. Crows. Thank you. I wanted to call them Men in Black. I'm like, no, that's totally different.
That's not right.
The Night's Watch. That's it. But it had nothing to do with that. It had absolutely nothing to do with what us book readers refer to as the mm-hmm. gift, and instead refer to Tyrion, and also, I believe, referring to
Lancel.
Littlefinger giving up Lancel to Lady Olenna.
Mm-hmm.
Although, who really gave up Lancel? Was it Lancel or was it Lady Olenna?
Yeah. It was a little bit unclear. We talked about that a little bit, too, of earlier in the episode of... You know, when did he confess and all that? It was a little bit unclear.
Well, and it got me thinking, like, ooh, did he confess like way before? And did the High Sparrow know about all this as he was allowing Cersei to say all of that? You know, was he allowing Cersei to basically throw out enough rope to hang herself so he mm-hmm. could then say, you know, what? And was this also his way of wiping out all of the 1%? In one fell swoop, you know, by just holding back.
Being patient, yeah. That's a good theory. I like that one.
And that would make him a very, very smart, Littlefinger-esque sort of fellow, which I do believe that is the case. So,
yeah, I think so. And on that note, mm-hmm. just Cersei's arrest, you know, in the books, she's not arrested because of the testimony by Lance Lannister, but I think the High Septon tortures a confession out of poor old Osney Kettleback, and he is the one that reveals Cersei's schemes to have Margaery imprisoned. And
yeah,
that's when
so
it
funny.
All comes spinning down.
It has nothing to do with Lancel. It has nothing to do with the fact that all of her children are the products of incest. It has to do with, you know, her schemes.
Yes. Where she brings about her own downfall really more than in the show. In the books, it's really... You know, her plan just spins out of control, and she gets a little payback.
Well, and that's why I'm even thinking that they are incorporating that part of the story but instead just making it the High Sparrow being shrewd.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing all these things ahead of time, and the fact that Lancel probably right filled him in fairly, you know, if that was the case, unless it was a little finger tweak with Lady Yelena. And again, getting into the differences, Lady Yelena still not in King's Landing, Littlefinger still not in King's Landing. You know, these are all major changes to the story, but boy, they add some great flavor.
Oh yeah. Anytime we can see Lady Olenna, the better, I think.
Okay. And was there anything else, you know, in the Northern lands or in Essos that we could talk about while avoiding what may be the giant steaming pile that's happening in the Southern lands of Westeros?
I think we covered most of what we need to talk about in the North. Do you want to cover the South? I already complained about it.
Okay. You already, I hope. What did Jenny and Karen complain about it? Or what were their takes? I'm just curious.
No, I think they seem to like it okay, but you know, I think this is one way where I think reading the book, maybe you don't feel that same disappointment if you haven't read the books.
Maybe not. And that's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
Because boy, I certainly did. I mean, we didn't get much. We did not get much of Dorne. I mean, basically, it consists of two scenes. One would be Jaime talking with Myrcella.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, did not happen in any way, shape, or form. Although Myrcella, I get the feeling in the books that she was fine with staying, right? Except for having her ear chopped off.
Yeah, she was happy, but...
She was happy. Okay, so then you get the whole Aerys Okart thing and his seduction by one of the Sand Snakes. And that Sand Snake was Arianne, or Arianne, however you want to pronounce her name. But it certainly is not Tyene, and it certainly is not seducing Bronn. And they don't do so in prison. You know, the circumstances were totally different. But I think it's that seduction of Aerys Okart that is informing this portion.
Yeah, maybe so.
You know, and we don't even need to get into the pointlessness of that entire scene, especially considering she just throws him the antidote. So I don't even know what to say about any of that. But I guess you guys already said it, so I don't need to say anything about that.
Yeah, I already did a bit of complaining, but I really think this is the one place where they've had a huge misstep. And maybe it should have been a little closer to the books. So,
agreed. Yeah, I think they could have done. They maybe could have slowed down the pace of the story and allowed a little more character development to move on. I mean, we still have barely even met Durant at all, and that just seems preposterous to me. He should at this point be some sort of an imposing figure, at least in terms of getting a sense of his inner machinations. You know.
Agreed.
And the very cool, thoughtful way that he approaches things. You know, we're supposed to have that sense that he is such a polar opposite from his brother, you know, cool and calculating versus the fiery, the passionate. We don't really have that yet. It just seems like a guy sitting in a wheelchair looking out over the water gardens, you know?
Yeah.
So it is being underserved. We've complained about this ad nauseum, I guess, at this point. The only positive on this would be, you know, I've made it known my attraction to the actress who plays Tyene.
And you get to see a little more of her this episode.
A lot more. And I mean, although it was unfortunate that I even then had to turn to Mrs. Blogg and just like during the scene going, this is ridiculous. Like just like the way it just like keep going back. I mean, am I watching Cinemax or what am I watching here? I just didn't understand it in context necessarily as to what was going on.
Sure.
And I was a little bummed to see Bronn start what I thought was going to be dying. And then you feel a little let down in a way where it's like, really? The antidote? Really? What are you, a Bond villain now? What is this?
Yeah, she has it on her necklace.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that makes sense. You know, if you're going to deal with that, especially if you get a little nick yourself, like, oops, you know, good to have the antidote nearby.
It's good they didn't take her necklace when they threw her in prison.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I mean, they seem to take most of their clothing away, so would have made sense that maybe a necklace would have gone.
Very good.
Do you have anything else for book talk?
Nope, that about covers my notes.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's I think we've about covered what we can think of to off that. We didn't even talk about anything with Stannis and Melisandre necessarily or Davos. Again, Davos is not even there. He's off elsewhere in the books. And
neither is Melisandre.
And neither is Melisandre. She's still up at the wall, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole thing is just, you know, out of whole cloth, just poof, gone. Of course, any of these Sansa, Theon, Ramsay things, no, that doesn't happen. I don't believe, did Jaime Poole try to do anything with Theon like that? I don't think so.
I don't think so. And, you know, of course we don't have Brienne's off somewhere else as well.
But. That's right. Exactly. So a lot of differences, few things we recognized, but even those things we recognized were in completely different circumstances.
Sure.
So Cersei's probably about the closest thing to how that's really going.
So nice to see.
Yeah. this is the part though where I almost start feeling bad for. Almost. Not
how can
quite.
You feel bad for her after her treatment of which I'm having
Marjorie. Yeah, that was pretty bad. I enjoyed this venison last night. All righty. I'm gonna go ahead and let you guys get back to the show, and I want to get back to my Memorial Day and do some cooking.
Okay. Thank you again.
No problem. Talk to you. Okay. I guess I'll talk to you guys next week. So see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Gracie and Mr. Blog. Now let's move on to next week on Game of Thrones.
Next week, season 5, episode 8 is going to be named Hard Home. One word. Arya makes progress in her training. Sansa confronts an old friend. Cersei struggles. John travels. I love these.
They're hilarious, aren't they?
They just don't want to tell you more.
We're not getting a lot of information.
We're not making. I mean, in fact, all of this happened in the past, practically. The Hard Home episode of Game of Thrones is written by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss and directed by Miguel Sapochnik and airs on Sunday, May 31 at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on HBO. Fun fact. Hard Home is a free folk fishing village located beyond the wall on a sheltered bay along the Shivering Sea, situated at the tip of the large peninsula known as Storold's Point. Many of the free folk survivors who survived the Battle of Castle Black, who did not get captured by the forces of Stannis Baratheon, fled to Hard Home. So, FYI.
Interesting.
Very cool.
So maybe Jon Snow, who evidently is traveling, might end up there at Hard Home?
I think that's the plan. I mean, that's what the guy with the red beard, I forget his name, the now...
Tormund Giantsbane?
Yes.
Yes, he's, that's the plan.
He was saying, John, you have to come with me, so I know you got skin in the game. So we'll see how that goes.
Fantastic. Okay, you guys ready to wrap that up?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right, that's our show, episode 11. Thanks for listening, everybody.
If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can call us at 813-563-3739. That's 813-JOFFREY.
If you would like to write in, you can email us at game@podcastica.com.
You can check out our website at gameofmicrophones.com.
We are also on Twitter at Podcastica and on Facebook at facebook.com/podcastica.
And be sure to check out the other first-class podcasts in our network at podcastica.com.
Join us next week for Game of Thrones Season 5, Episode 8, Hard Home, with hosts Jason, David, and Mr. Blog.
Aw, boys, here, come on in. Flashing light.
And you just heard our all-girl episode. Girls. Yay. All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening.
Send-off comes from William Shakespeare and its advice for Cersei, which is love all, trust a few.
Very good one.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouth-watering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.